Good. All right. So I wanted to discuss tonight something that had been asked, I guess, in different forms, one way or another, or many times over the last few months, the concept of being a chosen nation, the Am Segula, the Am HaNivchar. And I feel an appropriate time to discuss this topic and what that really means. And we don't have to be on the defensive to be say that we are the Am Segula, but to have a proper understanding from a Torah perspective what it means to be Hashem's people. I'd like to begin tonight is Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So there's a story told of one of the great Hasidic leaders who's known as the Blujevit Rebbe. And he survived the war. Many of the stories of what happened to him were written in an excellent book written by Dr. Yaffa Eliach called Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. It's not an easy reading, but it's a very powerful book. And in this book, she tells stories about the Blujevit. So before the war began, there happened to be a very famous doctor. I don't recall what his name was. He was Jewish, and he was passing through the town where the Rebbe was staying at. And his followers, the Hasidim, had a little bit of a pull. So they arranged that the doctor would come and perform a physical exam on the Blujevit Rebbe. And the doctor, again, was Jewish, but a little bit distant from his roots. And after the exam was over, he spoke to the Rebbe. He says, Rebbe, everything about you is in good health, except there's one issue. You have an irregular heartbeat. So the Rebbe heard what the doctor said, and he says, excuse me, whatever his name is, we'll call him Dr. Goldstein. He says, do you know what today is? Do you know what today's date is on the Hebrew calendar? He says, no, I don't. So the Rebbe told the doctor, today is Rosh Chodesh Sivan, which is tonight's date, Rosh Chodesh Sivan. He says, do you know what that means if tonight is Rosh Chodesh Sivan? He says, no. He says, in 6 days from now, it's going to be Shavuos. In 6 days, it's going to be Shavuos, and you want that my heart should beat regularly? Of course I have an irregular heartbeat. I'm excited for Shavuos. Because when a person approaches and understands what Shavuos is all about, and certainly the Rebbe did, it generates an excitement. And it generates a feeling that I'm going to receive the Torah again on the night of Shavuos. Now, different people have different minhagim about staying up all night. Some do not stay up all night. It's a recent minhag. This is not an ancient minhag at all to stay up all night on Shavuos. It started over the last few hundred years. Someone pointed out to me a scholarly article, not really the time to go into it in depth, but actually is closely linked to the discovery of coffee and caffeine and when it was imported into the New World. That's when the minhag came of staying up all night. So you understand when you're on your fourth cup of Joe at 3 o'clock in the morning, that you understand how these things go together. But let's jump in a little bit. Let's start at the beginning. And again, as always, any questions, you don't have to raise your hand. This is not school. You can just jump on in. So the first source is the introduction to Kabbalah Satorah. This is in the 19th chapter of Shmos. So the Torah says, again, you have the Hebrew and the English. B'chodesh ha-shlishi l'tzeis b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim b'yom hazeh bo midbar Sinai. So the third month after we left Mitzrayim, we came to the desert of Har Sinai. Ve'yizmir fidim ve'yavo midbar Sinai ve'yachnu midbar. They left the place of Refidim. They came to the desert of Sinai and they camped there. Vayichan sham Yisrael neged har. And they were there facing the mountain. Umoshe olo el Elokim. Moshe went up to Hashem. Vayikre lav Hashem min ahar lemor. Kos somar leveis Yaakov saged levenei Yisrael. This is the announcements that I want to give to you. One was for the men, one was for the woman. Different verbs, a different way that Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to speak to them. And Rashi HaKadosh tells us on the Pasuk where it says here, Segula, right? That you're going to be a Am Segula. Otzer Chaviv, a precious, beloved treasure. So that's what Rashi writes here. What does it mean when we say the word Am Segula? Can I highlight on here? Should be able, there we go. If I'm highlighting, Segula means a beloved treasure. That, and Rashi has sources for this throughout the Tanakh in Koheles, where it refers to this idea of a segula, something that's very precious. So what we see is a nice idea that when Hashem is telling the Jewish people, you're going to be my nation, you're going to be a treasure. And that reflects the special, unique status that the Jewish people have towards Hashem. Right? I'll just read it in English. don't think that you alone are mine and that I have no others besides you. What else do I have? My love for you should be made evident. The whole world, earth is mine, but the other nations mean nothing to me. That this is an idea that, again, Rashi's teaching us that we have a unique relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to remind everybody to please mute. Joining the class here. I don't know if you realize. Thank you so much. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No problem. Again, if you have questions, you can unmute, but that's true. The background noise can be a little bit distracting to everyone, so thank you. So, again, at the time of Kabbalah Satorah, Hashem's telling Moshe Rabbeinu and the Bnei Yisrael that if you listen to the voice and keep it, then you'll be a segula, right? Kili kol ha'aretz. The whole earth belongs to me. Va'atem tili mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. Now, mamleches kohanim, is anybody here, by show of hands, is anybody a bas kohen? Do you have anybody who's a bas kohen? If you're muted, if your screen's black, I'll take you. I'm going to don the kapsa chus and assume you're all raising your hand. But a bas kohen, a kohen is actually a verb. Lik hahein means to serve. So when it says that the Jewish people are going to be, all of us are going to be kohanim, I'm not. I'm a Yisrael. My followers Yisrael will always be Yisrael. Baruch Hashem. But the verb to be a kohen means to serve. So Hashem says, Atem tili mamleches kohanim, a nation of kohanim, and a goy kadosh. We'll come back to that phrase of a goy kadosh in a few minutes. But the idea behind it is simply that we're here to serve Hashem. And yes, we were chosen, and yes, we are a beloved treasure, but that chosenness has certain responsibilities and certain obligations that come with it. I remember as a kid, I saw a bumper sticker. It said, freedom equals responsibility. And that was what it said, freedom equals responsibility. And it's a very powerful message that yes, we were taken out and we were brought out of Mitzrayim. That's the whole time period we find ourselves now in between Pesach and Shavuos. But the freedom was not just to be free to hang out on street corners. The freedom was there that we should be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch and bring us to a higher place. So again, the way Rashi learns, again, the easy way to remember the dates of Rashi's life, you see at the bottom, 1040 to 1105. So that was recess growing up. I never forgot Rashi's life, 1040 to 1105. If it wasn't recess, you just remember the old-fashioned way. You have to actually memorize the numbers. But Rashi's telling us that Segula is the treasure, and we're going to be something special and unique amongst all of the other nations. So to understand, what I want to share with you a few different approaches of what exactly the Am Segula is, as Rashi defined it, but therefore what? Okay, so now we're a treasure nation. Okay, what does that mean? How do I interpret this? So the first approach is that of the Netziv. Netziv is an abbreviation for the letters of his name, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. He had a relative in Eretz Yisrael that his name was I don't know what the verb is. They Israeli sized it. They made it Israeli. Berlin became Bar Ilan. So everyone's familiar with the Bar Ilan University. That's the same family as Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. So he writes, if look here, Vahisemli Segula. I know this is Rashi's script. It's not so easy to read. He says, "Mi sheyirtze la'avodes Hashem lios nivdal mitumas goyei ha'aretz." A person who really wants to serve God and separate from the impurities in the world. Eifshar lios ger el imkein nesav la'aretz Yisrael l'toros seichem. The only way that a person could do this is by attaching us. So when we say that we are the Am Segula, it's a privilege. It's a privileged club, but it's not an exclusive club. Meaning, we don't actively look for gerim, for converts, and we discourage at first when people try to become part of Klal Yisrael, but it doesn't mean they're not allowed to. I forget, Susan, someone said Ruth is their favorite story, so we'll put a Ruth tie in here. Ruth is the paradigm of convert. In fact, many halachas, in terms of how to convert somebody, are learned out from the story, derived from the conversation that Ruth had with her mother-in-law. And a hint for that idea, if you look at the name Ruth, is spelled with three letters. And he was a Resh, a Vav, and a Sof. And if we add the numerical values of each one of those letters, a Resh is 200, a Vav is a 6, and a Tav is 400. So that acts 606. So Ruth, the convert, had seven mitzvos that every single human being, Jew and non-Jew, is required to keep. She had her seven mitzvos, but she added on, Rus is 606. Rus added on the 606 more and got to 613 that she converted. And that's what the Nesiv is telling us. He's not quoting Rus, but just a little tie-in over here. The idea is that anybody who wants to can become a part of him. I'll read the English at the bottom. Segula is a collection of treasures. The Torah is open to anyone, but in order to have a portion of the Torah, you have to join the Jewish people. The Jewish people is the repository where people who are interested in the Torah, that's where they turn. And that's what makes us unique and separated. So again, the idea of being the Am Segula, according to the Tziv, is a privilege, but it's not exclusive. And anybody who would want to and connect to that would be allowed to. That's what it's right here. Vezehu Segula, I don't know if you can see my cursor on the screen. That's what it means to be a Segula. Demashmo'o, the Mashmo'o means the implication of the word of being the Am Segula. Otzer is a storage house. Machnis Latoichel Mikol Ha'amim, that everyone can come to us. It's like the, you know, Grand Central Station. It's the place with the Hoover Dam, all the water. Everything comes into that and everyone can become connected to the Torah. That's the way the Tziv understands what it means when Hashem calls us his Am Segula. Okay? Let's move on to a second approach into understanding this. There's actually a Gemara here that supports this. It's a famous Gemara that Hashem says, I won't read it word for word, we can look on side. The Gemara tells us that in the future, all of the nations are going to come with a complaint. And they're going to say, look, it's not fair. You picked the Jews. If you would have picked us, we would have been your Am Segula. So Hashem, so to speak, as we say in Chinese, he bevorns the kasha. He preemptive strikes and says, no, it's not true. I offered the Torah to every single one of the 70 nations, and they refused. So you had your chance. You had your chance, but you said no. The Jewish people was offered, we said, Naaseh v'nishma, we're going to do whatever you say. So that's this idea that it's not exclusive. The Nesiv puts this Gemara together with it. It says, you have a chance. There is an opportunity. The door is open. If you want to become part of the Am Segula, great. Well, we'll see in a minute what the difference is being born into it versus being, you know, joining the team. But it's not a exclusive club, as we said. Okay. Another approach to this is the Malbim. The Malbim was one of the great Torah commentators. You have the years here, 1809 to 1879. Not for now, but just a quick introduction to the style of the commentary of the Malbim. He had such an expertise in all the 24 books of the Torah, of Tanakh, that he could tell you where two words that might at first glance appear to be synonymous, he would show how there's very unique differences and nuances that exist. We talk about Soson and Simcha. What's the difference between? They sound like both being happy. Gila, Rina, Ditza, Chedva, all these different expressions. So the Malbim, Kedarka Bekodesh, will go through and show how there's each one of these is reflecting a different thing. So in this, what the Malbim is going to do for us, I'm going to pick it up, if you look here, on the fourth line. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yesh Hevdel. There's a distinction between two terms, says the Malbim. The distinction being Am Segula and Am Kadosh. So one, again, the Am Segula is Hashem, we're his treasure. As Rashi pointed out, there's something unique to us. The Am Kadosh is the holy. We're his holy people. What's the difference? So explains the Malbim, they're not synonyms. She Segula hi dover shechoshuv mitzad ha-bechira, dover shiakar be'inei balov, mitzad ha-chein v'hayoyfi, v'yasim oysu v'oytzer miyucha kimo segulas malachim. So you have a segula, something that is special, it's unique. V'nikru am segula, we're called Hashem's special chosen nation. Mitzad shebocher Hashem bahem, Hashem picked us. Af she'enum adei Hashem v'goy kadosh. Okay, we're chosen, that's inherently, there's nothing we do about that. Aval am kadosh, but that name of being an am kadosh, nikru b'es yiskadshu v'yizromu mitzad kedushas ma'asehem. But when we do things that are holy and we bring Kedusha into our lives, that's what we're called the Am Kadosh. So one is our called, I'll call it a birthright, the fact that we were chosen through no, we didn't do anything special to become the Am Segula, but we on our own, through what we choose to do and the positive life decisions we make, turns us into the Am Kadosh. That's the way that the Malbim is explaining it. And a third approach is that of the Ksav Kabbalah. This is a little bit, maybe, I don't know. I could read the Hebrew, but I'm going to skip a little of a summary at the end. This is the Ksav Zal of Yaakov C. Mecklenburg. Again, the years 1785 to 1865. Segula is not a reward, but it's a mandate. Hashem is telling the Jewish people that we're going to be an Am Segula, And that's why it says at the end, we saw the psukim earlier, Kili kol haaretz, meaning I own the land, I own everything, this world is mine. So then, if we live up to what he's commanding us to do, that man, that Hashem is going to take care of us because everything is under his control. So, three different approaches in the Achronim, the more modern day commentators, of what exactly does it mean to be the Am Segula, the chosen nation. So the Netziv we saw says that we're chosen, right? And there's something unique about us, but you could choose. As I said over and over again, it's not exclusive. According to the Malbim, there's two parts to it. There's being the Am Segula, and there's being the Am Kadosh. The Am Segula, that's what we got. That's the Yerusha, that's our inheritance, that's what we didn't do anything about. But then there's the Am Kadosh, is what we do with, you know, how do you play the hand that you're dealt? What do you do with the fact that you're part of the Am Segula? And then according to the Kesava Kabbalah, that you said it's not a privilege, but it's a mandate. Hold off for a second. Are there any questions so far on anything that we've been saying? Is this clear? Do you want to go back and maybe address any points?
So yeah. Far, so good, Rabbi.
Okay. I like that. So far, so good.
So, being the treasured nation, even though it's something that we're born into, it's an inheritance, there's a responsibility with that.
Correct. Tremendous responsibility. Exactly.
Also, with being a holy nation, there's a responsibility in that.
Correct. Yeah? Yes. There's the Ramban and his commentary and the Torah on what's called Parshas Kedoshim. It deals with, it says that there's a separate mitzvah. Not everybody agrees today, but the Ramban advances a concept that besides from following all the red light, green lights, all the things we're allowed to do, all the things we're not allowed to do, there's a separate mandate of to be kadosh, to be holy. He gives an example of a person who would technically not violate any prohibition in the Torah. I'll give you an example. Let's say a person wants to buy a bottle of kosher wine. So he drinks, or she drinks, the bottle of kosher wine. They say, hey, I made a bracha. The wine's kosher. No problem. I'll have a second bottle of wine. I'll have a third bottle. I'll keep drinking and drinking and drinking. At the end of the day, what did I do wrong? Show me wherever it said that. I'll stuff my face all day long. I'll be a glutton. I'll do all these things. And you can't pin it down on me. You can't say to me you did something wrong. Because, again, it was all kosher. It was all kosher. Comes along, the Ramban says, no. There's a higher level of Kedusha that you have to sanctify yourself in what's permitted. Right. Does anybody here speak, we have any Yiddish? No, okay. I'll say it anyway because it just rolls off. Vusus Torah is Torah Mishnah, Vusus Meg Medarf Benisht. What is prohibited, and what's permitted isn't always necessary. You have to realize that. That's the idea that he's telling us, to lead a higher elevated existence. And that's a mitzvah of Kedoshim. So you're right. It is a privilege, and it has certain responsibilities with it. For example, you know, for those of us, you know, have with kids. So usually the firstborn in our family takes on more responsibility. So what did I do? I didn't ask to be the firstborn. Yeah, but you are the firstborn. So no, you're going to help out with the dishes and the garbage and the cleaning and the babysitting. What did I do? I didn't ask for this. Yeah, but that's who you are. So you got to live up to what Hashem put you in that position for a reason. None of us asked. There was no it was like the butcher, you know, we take a number upstairs in Shemayim and say, okay, put me in this family, put me over here, put me there. Hashem, for whatever reason, put us here. But now that we're here, we have to understand what it means to be part of the privilege of being the Am HaNivchar. Okay, let me go back and we'll go on a little bit. Okay, so now, everyone can still see my screen again? Yeah? Okay, a few of the, what does this mean from the fact that we are the Am HaNivchar? So there's the Navi Amos. Shimu es hadavar hazeh, asher dibar Hashem aleichem, b'nei Yisrael. I want you to listen, right, to what I'm saying. Al kol mishpacha asher heleisi me'eretz Mitzrayim limor. Of all the families that I took out, rak eschem yedati mikol mishpachos hadama. It's only you that I've literally known, that I singled out, I've made unique. Al kein, because you've been singled out, efkod aleichem es kol maseichem. I'm going to hold you to a higher standard, right? If you look at just even current events now, the Jewish people are held to a different standard than the entire world. In 1911, there was a Jewish man, Mendel Bayless, right, the Bayless trial. And there was a Ukrainian child who was found murdered outside of a factory, and they arrested this man, Mendel Bayliss, who himself came from an Orthodox home. He was no longer religious, but he came from a religious home, and they accused him of killing this non-Jewish child because they needed a certain number of blood libel, etc. And as part of his trial, it wasn't just Mendel Bayliss who was going up on trial, but Judaism was going up on trial. What do I mean? The anti-Semitic Russian government went through line by line the entire Gemara, the entire Shas, and tried to find sources which pointed to the fact that Jews feel they are superior than others, and therefore, because we feel we're superior, therefore we can kill and take the blood of a non-Jewish child for our ritual purposes, which we all know is ridiculous. But how are you going to defend this? And they came upon a passage in the Gemara in Yevamos. It's not on the source sheet, but it reads as follows. It says, "Atem kruim adam, ve'ein akum kruim adam." You, the Jewish people, are called Adam, man, and the non-Jewish nations are not called Adam. Oh, so don't you see from here that we're humans, we're Adam, and everybody else is subhuman. They're animals. They're not called Adam, right? That was the thing. So before I tell you what the legal defense was, because they knew what the trial was going to be like. They knew they had to somehow explain this very enigmatic passage. Would anyone like to think for a second, what might you have said if you had to explain this line that only the Jewish people are called Adam, but no one else is called Adam? Not an easy homework assignment, Mrs. Avraham. So I'll tell you like this. They got the greatest... I can give you a list of names of the who's who. Ramir Shapiro, the Lubavitch Rebbe. They all helped and helped. I believe the lawyer's name was Oscar Greenwald, I think. I don't have it in front of me, but that was his name, I believe, the lawyer. And they said, the answer is very profound. In the Hebrew language, there's a way to say something singular, and there's a way to say something in plural. For example, if I have one apple, it's called a tapuach. If I have many apples, it's tapuchim. Apples, plural. If I have one mountain, it's called a har. If I have many mountains, it's harim. And you take any single noun and you want to pluralize, there's a way to do it in Hebrew. There's different ways of calling human beings. There's gever, there's enosh, there's adam. Gever is one person, many is giborim. Enosh is one person, anashim are many. But watch this. When it comes to the word Adam, how do you say Adam plural? Does anyone take a guess? How do you say Adam in plural? It's a trick question because there is no way to say plural for Adam. And that's what the trial in defense of Mendel Bayliss argued. You know why it says the old Jewish people are the only ones who are called Adam? Because even our enemies realize that one Jew represents every single Jew. And what one Jew does, for good or for the opposite, reflects upon the entire Jewish people. And we're singled out. If somebody of a different nation, of a different religion, would do something inappropriate, so they'll say, oh, that Irish, it's one Irish guy, it's not the whole Irish people. If that one Catholic did something, it's one Catholic person, it's not all of them. Nobody does this when it comes to Klal Yisrael. When it's the Jewish people, it's the Jews. Some say, oh, that one person did it. That's why the Gemara is teaching us a psychological truth. Atem kruim Adam. Only the Jewish people are called Adam, and no one else is like that, because by anybody else, they'll make a plural. Let's say this is one person, this is an isolated incident. It doesn't reflect upon the whole people, the whole culture, the whole religion, but not when it comes to the Bnei Yisrael. So we are, so to speak, held out, but this is part of that Am Segula status. Because we are Hashem's chosen nation, we certainly are held to a higher standard than the others are. And we have to realize that. It's nothing new. But again, the Bayliss trial was a case in point where these accusations were made, and it was a successful defense. I mean, they had these crazy things. They thought that the number 13 was the number of wounds they found on the body, because the number 13 is significant in Judaism. And they did like forensics. They found that, no, there was like 14 cuts on the boy's child. It was like all crazy Bava Maisa. But it really highlighted this difference. Look, let me go back to the sources for a minute. Devarim. This is where the phrase appears. Es Hashem he'emarta hayom. Hashem has made us singular and unique. this day. Lios lechal elokim, to be your God. Leches bedrach, we follow him, lishmor chukav, mitzvosav, mishpatav, lishmoa bekolo, to obey what he tells us to do. V'hashem hemircha hayom lios lo le'am segula. And when we do this, when we keep Hashem's mitzvos, then we are the Am Segula, right? His treasured people. Kasheh dibelach, lishmor kol mitzvosav. So the link of being his nation is the fact that we keep his mitzvos. Okay, fine. So let me try to bring this out a little bit, bud. The Torah talks about this, the I being the Am Segula in Kisa Savo. And these psukim, the verses say that Hashem charges keep the Torah. And at the same time, Hashem commits that we'll be for him the Am Segula, and we're going to be elevated above all the nations to be the Am Kadosh. So this works very well with that Malbim we saw a few minutes ago, that the Am Segula is what is inherently ours, our birthright, so to speak. And then when we follow the mitzvos, that's how the mitzvos is what, right? We say in the bracha, Asher kidishanu b'mitzvosav, v'tzivanu, that the mitzvos are what gives us kedusha. In the holy books, it's explained the concept that the human body parallels exactly the 613 mitzvos. Whereas if you break down the number 613, there are 248 positive mitzvos, which correspond to 248 limbs in the body. When my wife was in college, I looked at her anatomy textbook. I wasn't able to figure out exactly how the 248 work out. Oh, it's like a crazy amount of bones in the foot and everything. I don't know. You have to like memorize all them. It was beyond my pay grade. But I believe them. I believe them. The 248 mitzvahs correspond to 248 bones. The 365 prohibitions, mitzvahs lo saseh, correspond to the number of sinews and veins in the human body. So every time we do a mitzvah or we refrain from doing something we're not supposed to do, that spiritually strengthens our body. And that's the idea that infuses kedusha. If you would have, imagine, it's not the best example, but imagine you have like 613 strings connecting your body up to Shemayim. And every time you do a mitzvah, that string, that bond, that cord becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Every time you give tzedakah, so that becomes bond. Or every time you daven, every time you make a bracha, whatever we do, every mitzvah we have strengthens that connection. And the Zohar tells that the 613 mitzvos are really 613 pieces of advice how to fulfill the mitzvah of clinging and attaching ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and you see in these psukim, when we talked about the Am Segula, it's connected to mitzvah observance. That's a key point to bring out. The Gemara in Brachos tells us that Hashem made a unique bond with us. Let me read you, I have the English underneath it for you. Is the Holy One, blessed, glorified through the glory of Israel? Rav Chiya bar Abba says, yes, as indicated by the juxtaposition of two verses. You've affirmed this day the Lord is your God. You'll walk in his ways and keep his laws and commandments, listen to his voice. And the subsequent verse says, and the Lord has affirmed this day that you're his treasure, meaning the Am Segula. He spoke to you to keep his commandments. That's what we just read in the previous source. From these two verses derived, the Holy One blessed be said to Israel, you've made me a single entity, right? A chativa, you've made me singular from all others. Because I will make you a single entity in the world, you'll be my treasure nation. So we see that it's almost like a funny sort of parallel. We didn't pick any of the idols. We picked Hashem. So Hashem didn't pick any of the other nations. He picked us. And that's this reciprocal relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara comedy on the Pasuk says that we bring honor to Hashem. And as such, he brings honor to us. So it comes out the Segula, this special treasure, it's not automatic, but it's contingent on us accepting Hashem and keeping his mitzvahs. So I want to show you the Ramban and the Tosfos on this Pasuk. The Ramban says, Ki hayom ezeh lechem ki yom Sinai, v'Hashem romeim v'gadol eschem v'kibul ha-Torah shetihiyu lo la'am segul mikol ha-amin. The result of we accepting the Torah at Har Sinai, the Torah and mitzvahs are designated for us. Non-Jews do not have a portion in the Torah and mitzvahs, and that's what the Segula means. The Tosfos under here says Dover Acher Hemarta Loshen Tumura, the Chiluf of exchanging it, Klomar, which means as follows: Bishvil Hashem, Lata is Kol Elohus V'Charta Al Kodesh Baruch Hu. We got rid of all the false gods we said a minute ago and chose Hashem. Hashem hechliv kol ha'umo sheba olam. Hashem got rid of all the other nations. Ubochar b'ga and pick us. Lios lo la'am segula v'domalev t'amru kol poli oven shemachlichu nivrehim ve'enem oimdim b'diburam. So because we made this contract with Hashem, that's how we're bonded to Him. This idea of a bris. There's more to talk about. Let me just do one more source and I'll open up for questions. There's more here from the Kuzari. I want to share with you the Maharal. This Maharal is discussing a fascinating question. Let me close for a second. When we encounter certain personalities in the Torah, we're usually given a background behind why God chose them for a specific mission. Quite simply, we think about Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So ladies, what stories are we told about Moshe Rabbeinu before God chooses him and speaks to him at the burning bush and says, I'm picking you to be my man and to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim? There's at least three stories that come to mind. What are we told? What does the Chumash reveal to us about the personality of Moshe, his actions before God picks him?
Well, he has compassion for the slaves. He goes out and he wants to see what they're going through, and that's when he kills the Egyptian who is beating.
Excellent. So there's one good story. We see that an Egyptian man is attacking a Jew, and he steps in and he kills him. He fights. He stands up for justice. Good. Any other stories? That's true. Are there any other ones that come to mind before Hashem picks Moshe?
About him, you mean?
Yeah. Stories were told about him, what he does, actions that Moshe does.
The shepherd. Okay.
He's the shepherd, right? And according to the Midrashim, that Moshe saw a little sheep that wandered away, and he feels, oh, I feel so bad. You must be so tired. You were wandering. He picks up the little sheep and puts it on his shoulder. I don't know how much it weighed, but it couldn't have been easy. And he says, look, and God says, wow, I see how you cared, how much care you have for one little sheep. You're going to take care of my sheep, the Jewish people. So that's a medrash. We have the story that Susan said about breaking up the Egyptian man. We find two Jews who are fighting with each other. Right? And Moshe gets involved in that as well. Inter fighting between the Jewish people. And a third story that we find is before God reveals himself, Moshe goes to the well and he sees the seven daughters of Yisro, and they're being, you know, taken advantage of and pushed aside and neglected. They're the underdogs. And he helps them. Now, it's a fascinating progression if we just look for a second. Three stories. One is Moshe between an Egyptian, a non-Jew, and a Jew. A second story, Moshe between two Jews who are fighting. And the third story we have about Moshe Rabbeinu is between two non-Jews who are fighting, right? These shepherds and the daughters of Israel, you could say, Goyim, let them work it out themselves. But he doesn't. He gets involved because there's a social concern for people over there. And then Moshe's picked. Fine. I'm not going to go through all the stories, but let's, with Noah, before he's chosen to build the Teva, the Ark, and save the world. So we're told, Noach motzachem be'enei Hashem, that Noach did certain things that found favor in God's eyes. If we go in the Navi, we have Shimshon, right? Samson and Delilah. Okay, so he's chosen also, but we're told things about them. There's one and only one exception that we don't know anything about this person, and all of a sudden, God chooses them. Who's the one exception that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to and gives him a very big job, but we don't know anything about him beforehand? Double cheesecake for anyone who can get this one.
Abraham?
That's right. All right. Ricky, put it on my tab. Send her a double cheesecake. Very good. Very good. In the beginning of the Torah, he's told two words, Lech Lecha, get up and go, leave this land, and I'm going to make a great nation out of you. Why? What did he do? Where does it stay? Stateness in the Verda. There's nothing in the Torah that tells us why in the world Abraham is chosen. So I want to share with you, let me share my screen one more time, the commentary of the Maharal. And the Maharal, again, I'll summarize. I won't read it. It's all in Hebrew over here. The Maharal tells us this specifically a very good reason why we're not told anything about Avraham beforehand. Because, put it simply, Hashem picked Avraham, no strings attached. We're chosen to be his nation, and it's not dependent upon our actions. if we would have been told stories about what Avraham did. So you might think the only time God chooses me as a Jewish person is when I'm behaving like Avraham. But the answer is no. It's not like that. Hashem chooses us at all times. When I see something in the chat, he broke his father's idols. Yeah, but that's not, again, that is not in, that's not in the, in the, it's a medrash. It's a medrash that he broke the idols, but it's not in the actual, in the story itself. On Shabbos, we were telling a story. Nechama Leibowitz, a great female teacher of Torah for many years, had countless students. And she was once giving a lecture at an army base, and she, let me close that chat, and in the chat, and she asked them, please find in the story where, she opened up a Torah and says, find me in Tanakh, find me the story where Avram breaks the breaks his father's idols. So there's like Israeli generals like thumbing through it. The only thing is, this isn't the one I grew up with. Give me a different one. The answer is good. It's not really there. It's a fascinating, you know, this idea that at the end of the day, what it what it could be. One second, do I have this here? Let me read it. The idea that Avram is chosen, he doesn't need any merits. That the Jewish people are inherently chosen by Hashem, and it's a tremendous encouragement because the person might think, well, I'm only so Jewish, you know, when I'm acting Jewish, when I'm doing the things, like we're learning this whole night, the whole shir is talking about, it's a contingency. Being Hashem's Am Segula is keeping his mitzvos. So I don't think I've told this story or this letter in this class, but I've shared it in my shul with my students. I want to read to you a letter. And again, I apologize if I'm going to just open it up. I have it on my saved on my computer. This is a question that was asked to Rabbi Aaron Moss. He is Amos is a rabbi in Sydney, Australia. And here's the question. Although I was raised in a traditional home, was brist and bar mitzvahed, sorry about the misspelling, I never had any faith or religious belief. I'm now age 34 and would describe myself as an atheist. I have no wish to be buried in a Jewish cemetery, and my will also make this clear. I've married a non-Jew in a civil ceremony. My question is, can I consider myself officially non-Jewish by my affecting opting out, or do I need some sort of dispensation to be officially no longer Jewish? Many thanks for your help in what is perhaps an unusual question. Best wishes, Edward. So imagine you're the rabbi, you're the Rebbetzin, and you get a letter like this from Edward asking you, do I need a special dispensation to not be Jewish anymore? Well, what would you say? Well, how would you respond to such a letter like this?
Well, the truth is, once a Jew, always a Jew.
You can't take a shower and wash it off, right? No matter what type of shampoo you use, right? Once a Jew, always a Jew. That's right. But what would you say to him? Is that what you say, Edward? Once a Jew, always a Jew?
Well, when I left, I thought I left Judaism and I converted to Catholicism. And when I came back, you know, my rabbis, like Rabbi Landau, told me I've always been Jewish, regardless of what I did or thought I did.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Let me read to you Rabbi Ross's answer. I wish I would have written. Mrs. Avraham, the English major, wishes she wrote it also. But watch this. Amazing. You can't get a better answer. Here it goes. Dear Edward, I'd like to help you, but I feel there's nothing I can do. According to your question, you've done everything possible to negate your Jewishness. In practice, you do not keep Jewish tradition. In belief, you're an atheist. In family life, you've married a non-Jew and thus won't have any Jewish children. And even in death, you're determined not to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. One would think that all this would be enough to confirm your un-Jewishness. But no. For some reason, you're still unsatisfied. You still feel Jewish. So much so, you feel you need an official dispensation. And so being an atheist, who do you turn to solve this problem? A doctor? A psychiatrist? The civil celebrant that married you? No. You turned to a rabbi. I'm reminded of the child who ran away from home, but ended up just going around and around the block because his parents told him never to cross the road by himself. I'm sorry, Edward. There is nothing more you can do. You're as Jewish as Moses, as Ariel Sharon, as the chief rabbi of Wales. In fact, it seems that being Jewish is the most dominant factor of your personality. It's even influencing the place you want to be buried. Why would an atheist care about where they're buried? Edward, Jewishness is not a belief. a feeling, a conviction, or a lifestyle. It's a state of being. We can either celebrate it or fight against it, but it will always be there. So why not celebrate it? All right? Wow, what an answer. What an answer. That's it, to celebrate it. And I think that's really what Shavuos is all about. Shavuos is a celebration of our Jewishness. It's a celebration of our unique status, and it's a celebration of the privilege that we have of being the Am HaNivchar, of being Hashem's Am Segula, and we have nothing to be defensive about, but we can celebrate this, and we have a true simcha, a true joy from understanding our unique role in Hashem's world. And I think that relates back to the story that we began with. When the Blizhev Rebbe was asking, why do you have an irregular heartbeat? Because very soon it's going to be Shavuos. And if I understand what that means, and I incorporate those messages and internalize that into my life, into my view, into how I interact with others, and how I make decisions, is what's truly important, where I place my priorities, that's really the greatest Yom Tov we could possibly have, and the greatest source of Simcha. I appreciate everybody coming and learning. Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of people tonight. If any questions, I always like to leave time at the end for any questions or comments. Please feel free to unmute.